dodges. I ride in this wind on my good horse. I call you my shiny black bears to the playhouse of fortune to take the bright silver and gold you have taken from somebody.
Tune to WEOS Geneva, WXXE Fenner Syracuse, W201CD Ithaca Community Radio, or Free Radio Santa Cruz. This is Unwelcome Guests. I'm Lynn Gary. Our program this evening will be entirely devoted to presenting a talk given by U.S. Army scientist Major Doug Rocky, who spoke last week at a VFW hall in Rochester. Major Rocky is an expert on the subject of depleted uranium and the Gulf War syndrome. Tonight's talk will include information that the U.S. military knows and has known the health and environmental hazards of depleted uranium since the 1940s, and is collaborating with the nuclear power industry to keep the public in the dark, and has written a directive to leave radioactive shrapnel in wounded soldiers in order to study them, as well as performed experiments on the unwitting U.S. population with chemical and biological weapons, and that they basically don't give a damn about the fate of the average soldier once they've served their purpose. If you're unable to tape tonight's program, it will be available as an MP3 for download in the archives of the Unwelcome Guests website, www.unwelcomeguests.org. Look in the archive for show 164. Now, Major Doug Rocky.
Many years ago, they asked Doug Rocky to train, educate, and clean up depleted uranium. Those were his orders. He is still doing his job. They haven't rescinded those orders, so he's still doing it. However, they're not so happy about the job that he's doing. They have tapped his phone. He's had conversations with the spooks on the other end who forgot to turn the thing off. They've broken into his house and they've trashed his computer. They've run him off the side of the road. They've shot out his windows. This is Major Doug Rocky. Thank you.
I'm a warrior, ladies and gentlemen. You need to understand that before we start out. There's something else, and I have a distinct pleasure. A member of my team from Gulf War I to clean up the depleted uranium mess. Her parents are in the audience tonight. Mr. and Mr. Kessler, why don't you stand up, please? Their daughter, Sergeant Barbara Andres, is serving in the Gulf right now in Gulf War II. She went to Gulf War I. She was with us when we did all of this mess. It's the first time I've had a set of parents from my team in the audience. So it's good. It's a little bit different. War. I went to Vietnam before I even shaved. Spent 2 years in Vietnam dropping bombs out of B-52s before I even shaved. Purpose of war. You gotta say, I'm a teacher. I'm a school teacher. I'm a science teacher. But I'm a warrior. The purpose of war is real simple. To kill and to destroy. It doesn't matter who you are. It doesn't matter whether you're a cook. And we got a Gulf War veteran cook right there. And he did poison me. Purpose of war, doesn't matter whether you're a cook or a medic, it doesn't matter whether you're a mechanic, is to kill and destroy. Period. It doesn't matter. And when you go to war, there are no winners, there's only losers. It doesn't matter if you're on the winning side or if you're on the losing side. You are physically changed forever. There's a whole bunch of us in this room, Vietnam vets sitting over there, Gulf War vets sitting all over, it's parents of vets. You're changed physiologically and psychologically forever, even if you win the friggin' battles. We won the battles in Vietnam, but we lost that sucker. We won the battles in Gulf War I and ejected Saddam out of Iraq and, you know, the Iraqis out of Kuwait and almost got him out of Iraq, but we didn't do it. But we lost. and we're back in there again. The purpose of war is to kill and destroy, and everybody loses. We got to remember that. What happened in Gulf War I? Gulf War I started because the U.S. baited and switched and got Iraq to invade Kuwait. You got to understand, Kuwait was part of Iraq until we ripped it apart in order to get control over the oil pipelines at the end of the Gulf. Reality is, we also knew at the beginning of Gulf War I that Iraq did possess chemical and biological munitions, and that included weaponized anthrax. How do we know that? Because the United States gave it to them and we kept the receipt. Flat out happened. There's a lot of stuff people don't talk about. They talk about the atrocities that happened, babies being thrown out of incubators. The Iraqi army arrayed itself along the Saudi-Iraqi border, ready to go in. They weren't there. They were farther back in. There's a lot of stuff that happened that didn't come out. Now, the weekend the Gulf War started, I was at Cleveland, Ohio, on a staff visit, because I was a senior officer in a major command, and I spent the weekend with a guy named Paul Tibbetts, who was also on a staff visit. Now, some of you know who Paul Tibbetts is in world history. He dropped the first bomb out of the Enola Gay on Hiroshima. And him and I and his crew, we discussed what was happening and what was going to happen and how it was going to occur. Because wars don't change. You kill and you destroy and you're trashed. When the Gulf War started, I was at the University of Illinois having a fine day working in my physics lab, doing all kinds of stuff. We're building detectors. I'm just a long-haired hippie that happens to be in the reserves and had been in the military since 1967. And all of a sudden they said, Doug, we're going to have nuclear biological chemical warfare. You got to go teach. So I did for months and months and months. Basically one weekend every week. Just 1-2 days a week continuously from August until November. And all of a sudden, I got a phone call, physics lab, and they said, you got a report. General wants to see you on Saturday. Okay. So I drove up there, and Saturday afternoon, he said, Doug, you're going to war again. Okay. So on Thanksgiving Day of 1990, I went to war for the third time. And we got over there, and our tasking, very specifically, was several things. Number one, I was with the 12th Preventive Medicine Detachment. We were the Theater of Public Health and Occupational Health Department. But I was also assigned to a team called Bowers Raiders. We were the Theater Nuclear, Biological, and Chemical Warfare Special Operations and Teaching Team. We were it. The team had been put together from a whole group of us that had worked together for many years, primarily from universities. Because we taught emergency medicine, we were all paramedics, we did emergency rescue, we taught hazardous materials, and we were scientists and engineers and doctors, and pharmacologists, and toxicologists. And we had a problem. Now, in December of 1990, the first problem started to show up. And what happened is because we knew that Iraq possessed chemical and biological munitions, we knew they were weaponized, we knew where they were. We made a conscious decision of the command headquarters to blow them up in place. This is the first thing that started getting us. Now, their daughter is sitting up at KKMC all the way up in the front end. This stuff is flying in on him. He's sitting up there at KKMC on the south end of the post cooking food for these guys. But we blew them up in place. Now, this is Schwarzkopf's autobiography on page 390. He actually wrote it up about our decision. And we told him at that time, when you blow this stuff up, it's going to come back on you. Because you can't hit an ice cube with a hammer, which is what we did when we put explosives next to chemical and biological munitions, and destroy them. They just get spread all over, and everybody got sick. Really nice. Now, when you move a military or destroy an infrastructure, you've got hazardous materials all over the place. You know, we got organics and inorganic compounds, we got heavy metals, we got radiological materials, just like it's scattered all over the city. And when you blow up that stuff, it just gets released on everybody. When you move the army and you release this stuff, it goes all over the place and you get a toxic wasteland. Then we had all of these crazy immunizations. Now, when we got activated, the majority of the reservists and National Guard, along with the active duty, the doctors had not maintained our immunizations. Remember, you're supposed to get a shot every so many years and keep up with that? They'd forgot about that. So what we did is we stripped everybody down, the guys down to their shorts and the girls to their shorts and their bras, marched them through a line, gave them 2, 4, 6, 8 shots and a gamma goggle and GG up in the upper butt. And they got sick. Because the military had not maintained the medical take care and status of the troops. And they still are not doing it today. Then we're going along with this stuff, and we knew that we're going to war. We're into a desert, which is an extremely dirty environment, right, Sarge? Really, I mean, you're trying to cook in this filthy rat's nest of everything, correct? And we knew we needed pesticides, just like you do in any kitchen or any house. So we ordered pesticides before we left Fort McCoy, Wisconsin, but we never got them. We ordered pesticides that were approved by the Environmental Protection Agency, where we knew the quality control, we knew what was in there, we knew how to use them, but they never got there because they were shipping beans so he could feed our butt and their daughter Barbara. They were shipping bullets so he could shoot up the guy. We've got a grunt over here. And they're shipping blood so we would all live. So what happened is two members of our unit went out and bought pesticides on the open market. They couldn't even read the labels. And they sprayed it all over the place and everybody got sick. When you go to war, it's a toxic wasteland. Then what happened to top this sucker off is everybody was afraid of nerve agents. Well, they ought to be, because we gave them to Iraq, and Iraq had already used them on Iran. They'd already used them on the Iraqi Kurds. And by the way, a few weeks ago, I was in Australia. When I was in Sydney, Australia, Adelaide, Australia, I actually met a member of the Iraqi military, a chemical officer, that had been granted asylum in Australia for blowing the whistle, that was involved in putting the chemical munitions in on Halajba. It happened. Nerve agents. But guess where they got them from? Surprise. So what we had to do is give people pyridostigmine bromide, PD tabs. Did you eat those, Sergeant? PBs? You sure did, didn't you? More than one. I know Barbara ate them. PB tablets are these little white pills that are supposed to prepare your body to get hit by nerve agents. They call them an anti-nerve gas pill. Well, nerve agents have never been gases, never will be gases. They're liquids and dust. And so everybody ate these PB tablets, except they forgot to tell you that PB tablets are a common drug called mestinone. It's in the physician's desk reference. But they ain't nothing but gumdrops sprayed with Raid and Black Flag. Ain't this nice? Over 50% got sick. So now they've got the mixture from all the stuff we blew up. Now they got the pesticides. Now they got the PB, and we wonder why everybody was getting sick. It kept going. It got better. Iraq, got to understand, the purpose of war is kill and destroy. Now, they're retreating out of Kuwait, right? You want to put up a smoke screen so you can shoot our butts, okay? So you light the oil well fires. Tactically, it's a perfect maneuver. Tactically, it's fantastic. They did the right thing. You couldn't read a book in the middle of the day. You couldn't see anything. And so they could go where they want, and we couldn't shoot them. But they knew where we were coming, and hopefully they could shoot us. Now, the byproducts of that oil well fire were extremely complex mixture of inorganics, organics, and compounds, and carcinogens, and everything else. And that just got everybody sick. There was sulfur dioxide, nitrogen dioxide, bifidels, chrysine, fluorothene, pyrene, cadmium, chromium, nickel, lead, zinc, benzene, toluene, and PN xylene. And everybody got sick. Now remember when Grandma told you don't pick your nose? Did you use a popsicle stick to get the junk out of your nose too? Scrape it off your... It's the only way you could. And everybody got sick. And we reported that up. Now, what happened on top of this whole toxic wasteland is the United States decided to use uranium munitions. Now, you got to understand, ladies and gentlemen, I'm a warrior. If I got to go to war tomorrow morning to defend this nation, I will go back to war and I will kill in a heartbeat. Just like that gentleman will and like that gentleman will back there. Right, sir? No two ways about it. But when we use uranium munitions, we cross the line. There's a big difference. A big, big difference. Now, we got over there, and you have to understand, the Army message system doesn't work real well, okay? But rain or shine, the U.S. mail gets through, even in the combat. Sometimes the cookies are delayed and they're kind of crumbly, but you get them anyhow. I got a letter from Colonel Charles Day at the Pentagon. And he is the head health physicist at this time for the United States Army. And he said, Doug, you better start thinking the health and environmental effects of uranium munitions. Now, this is in December of 1990. I went on active duty for the first time in December of 1967. Just 23 years later, I ain't never heard of uranium munitions. Okay? I didn't know we had them in Vietnam. I just found out tonight that they absolutely did have them in Vietnam. Is that correct, sir?
That is correct.
You have them. So they did have them in Vietnam.
Do they have them now?
Oh, you betcha. But you didn't use them in Nam, right?
No, we didn't use them in Nam.
But you did have them.
Yeah.
Okay. This is the first time I heard that man that had them in his hands. Okay. Now, I'm going, what are these things? So I go to my books, science teacher, I got all my physics books. I'm teaching nuclear and biological chemical warfare. So we got up there and I started asking questions. What are these things and what's happening? Okay? A lot of problems. Well, the ground war commenced and it happened. And unfortunately, the majority of casualties in Gulf War I were due to friendly fire. That means we shot our own. We killed our own. And they were due to the use of uranium munitions. Flat out, that's what happened. So all of a sudden, right after the ground war happens, you know, we're into that last week of February, first week of March of 1991, all of a sudden I get called over to the command headquarters. This is down at Eskan Village, south of Riyadh, Saudi Arabia. And my commander and I got over there, and the general says, hey, Doug, you got to go clean up the DU mess. And I go, uh-oh, the order's here. Headquarters, U.S. Army Forces, Central Command, ordered me to do it. Signed for the commander, the chief of staff, David Mallory. Well, you know, when the chief of staff for his forces, Central Command, signs it for the commander, that's an order from Norman G. directly. Correct, sir? That's how it works. So we went up there to clean it up. And when I got up there, I got to KKMC. Now, ladies and gentlemen, you need to understand, their daughter, Barbara, was already up there. They're cleaning up this uranium-contaminated equipment. They're picking up the DU casualties with basically nothing but boots, shirts, and shorts. Is that correct, ma'am?
Yeah.
No warnings, no nothing. No training, nothing at all. Now, myself and my team got up there, and they've heard this story, and it's been published all over. All of a sudden, hey, these three guys came in gas masks and chemical suits and all boosted. That was us. You've heard this story from day one. They had not told their daughter and anybody else of the hazards. They hadn't told anybody else of the hazards in the whole friggin' army.
Are they telling them now?
No, not at all.
What is KKMC?
KKMC is King Khalid Military City. It's in northern Saudi Arabia, about 30 miles from a place called Hafr al-Batan. It's about 50 miles out of Iraq, right near the triangle in the dead center up northern Saudi Arabia. That's where we marshaled 7th Corps and 18th Corps together when they end up doing. The 7th Corps made what we call the Hail Mary play up and around. Well, you know, the reason the Hail Mary play worked is because DU munitions, but the other thing was the Iraq military wasn't arrayed along the border. Now, if they had been there, as they said, when they justified the war, they never would have been able to do that because they would have hit them right away. And anybody that's been in the military knows, it, right, sir, you don't go against a fortified position, do you? You're going to get your butt kicked. You're going to get waxed. Okay? They weren't there. But that was a reason for the war. So anyhow, we found out, we got up there, their daughter is up there, they're cleaning this mess up, they're trying to collect all of the contaminated equipment. But you got to understand, it ain't just got contaminated equipment, it's got all the body parts in it. She's talked about this. They just, you know, they just moved it back and brought it back. They had to go up and collect it. And they went up and we got up there and they're bringing everything back. Now, the only thing I can describe what happened is, oh my God, it's the only way to describe. The casualties we saw were unbelievable. The wounds we saw were unbelievable. The destruction we saw was unbelievable. But more important, the amount of contamination and how it spread was unreal. We have all our collection, all of our contaminated stuff on one side of the road, and they're sleeping on the other side of the road in the tents. That's it. And the wind's blowing all over the place. And they got all the other contaminants coming back on them, and they got everything coming back on them. So we get up there and we start figuring out what do we need to do. Well, we started identifying, collect, secure. We started to process, decontaminate. Now, you want to talk about something. We're in there scraping up brains and body parts with 6-inch putty knives because they're splattered all over the place. Because when this goes off, you have the uranium munitions going off. You have all the other ordnance that goes off. You got all the contaminants. It ain't a nice day. Now, what happens with a uranium round? Each individual uranium round is a solid rod of uranium-238, contaminated with plutonium, neptunium, and americium, and when some of the stuff got processed out of the reactors, uranium-236. Now, the solid rod of uranium, the tank round is 3/4 of an inch in diameter, 18 inches long, and is over 10 pounds of solid uranium. When that thing flies out of the bore of the gun, the tube, it immediately catches fire because you got a plastic sabot, a cup that faces forward. When it comes out, the sabot falls away. It's a cup, and all you got is a giant uranium dart. Now, that thing is flying at 1,100 meters per second, and it weighs over 10 pounds. Now, it's already on fire the minute it leaves the bore of the gun. If you've seen the videos, or you'll see the videos of Visible Wars, Hidden Wars, or the training videos, you'll see this. Now, that thing's on fire. When that round hits anything, it breaks up in fractions and creates what we call shrapnel. Okay, fine dust particles, and we call it spalling of shrapnel, whatever you have. Now, this stuff is all on fire. So it's like taking a handful of marbles, lighting them on fire, and throwing them across this room at high velocity. Anything in there that can blow up from concussion goes kaboom. Anything that can ignite and go burn and blow up goes kaboom, and you got a catastrophic destruction. Now, what happens then is you have all this burning uranium cause catastrophic detonation. And when this detonation happens, you got uranium rounds in our Abrams tanks that go boom. We now got them in the Bradley fighting vehicles. I did the research on it. They go boom. Okay, you got all the other conventional munitions that may go boom, boom, not go boom. And when these guys fire around, it doesn't matter who it is or what's happening. They get in the target, and they fire one, fire two, fire three. Man, I had Abrams tanks friendly fire there hit 4 or 5 times. That's 50 pounds of uranium scattered in and around inside the vehicle, and we wonder why they didn't live. And we were wondering why their daughter and all the rest of the guys in their unit were having problems getting sick by the time we got up there, with the rashes and the respiratory problems and everything else. Well, we got up there within a few hours, we were getting sick with the rashes and the respiratory. You know what it's like to look like you got shot by a shotgun and just be open and bleeding all the time? That's what it looks like. And it's never gone away since that day. So I immediately ordered medical care for everybody. I called back to the command, to the doctor in charge that I work for, the command headquarters, said, you gotta get medical care for everybody. And we ordered medical care. And it never happened. Now, their daughter's unit had all this stuff contaminated, and so I ordered direct medical care for those guys immediately through the commander and Lieutenant Steele while they're still in theater, and it never happened. And then they got back to New Jersey and went on down to Wilmington, and they finally got in touch with Dr. Asif Durakovich, U.S. Army Colonel Asif Durakovich, the number one expert in the Army on this stuff. And he started giving medical care to that whole unit and found out they were all sick. You know Mad Dog and Blue? Some of the other guys? Okay. There are some of the other guys who worked with us, and they're, as you know, the guys that died from cancer, lung cancer. Everybody was sick. And we ordered the medical care. It took our team, and we had a whole bunch of different groups. Primarily, it was my team, a handful of us, plus the 144th and their daughter. It took us 3 months to clean up 24 vehicles for shipment back to the United States. That's 15 Abrams tanks and 9 Bradley fighting vehicles. And we buried the rest of the junk in the desert. We dug a big hole, and Dave Kiefer and his guys took the stuff and they pushed the stuff in the hole. Unexploded ordnance, contaminated equipment, destroyed Bradley fighting vehicles, and Americans. I couldn't get them out. We couldn't scrape them out. Before Gulf War I, there was hardly any information on how to clean up DU. They had Rich Lazar, who by the way is now dead from lung cancer, lymphoma, wrote a pamphlet in September of 1990, Guidelines for Safe Response to Handling, Storage, and Transportation Accidents Involving Army Tank Munitions or Armor Which Contained Depleted Uranium. And in there he said the limits, maximum limits on alpha, fixed alpha, is 200 counts per minute. Well, when we finally got good, adequate, effective radiac equipment, it's up around 15,000 to a million. And the maximum, and the removable was none, but heck, you know, that's blowing all over. Okay, now the fixed beta and gamma, the maximum was 0.05 millirads per hour. We were measuring at 300 millirads per hour. And it still goes on like that. Well, we got up there. And now, you know, in contrast before the war, when Colonel Day had sent the information through the U.S. mail, now I get official memorandums down through the chain of command. We're working for Schwarzkopf and then Gus Pagonis. Schwarzkopf left and Gus Pagonis took over. And I got two memorandums. First memorandum I got came from Colonel Gregory Lyle at the Defense Nuclear Agency, and this is what he sent. This came official military chain of command. Quote, "As explosive ordnance disposal, ground combat units, and civil populations of Saudi Arabia, Kuwait, and Iraq come increasingly into contact with DE ordnance, we must prepare to deal with the potential problems. Toxic war souvenirs, political furor, and post-conflict cleanup are only some of the issues that must be addressed. Alpha particles, that's uranium oxide dust, from expended rounds is a health concern, but beta particles from fragments and intact rounds is a serious health threat." Make sense? I'm a science teacher. I'm a physicist. You can't go inhale and ingesting solid radioactive heavy metal uranium dust. You can't get this in your body, in the shrapnel in your body. You ain't going to have a good day. Just think about this. Mixing up some Kool-Aid, but instead of Kool-Aid, you put a cup of lead paint dust, and then you mix it all together and drink it down. Same thing. Well, we're all concerned, and we're trying to do stuff. And I get another memorandum, the famous Alamos Memorandum. Now, this is 1990. I've been in the military some over 23 years, and I got this order. Los Alamos, New Mexico. This is all quote, 1 March 1991. "The effectiveness of depleted uranium penetrators. There is relatively a small amount of lethality data for uranium penetrators, either the tank-fired long version or the Gowie 8-round fire from the A-10 close air support aircraft. The recent war has likely multiplied the number of DU rounds fired at targets by orders of magnitude. It is believed that DU penetrators were very effective against Iraqi armor. However, assessments of such will have to be made. There has been and continues to be a concern regarding the impact of DU on the environment. Therefore, if no one makes a case for the effectiveness of DU on the battlefield, DU rounds may become politically unacceptable and thus be deleted from the arsenal. If DU penetrators prove their worth during our recent combat activities, then we should assure their future existence through service and DOD proponency. If proponency is not garnered, it is possible we stand to lose a valuable combat capability. I believe we should keep this sensitive issue in mind whenever after-action reports are written. Respectfully, Lieutenant Colonel Michael Zien." Now, 1967, I took an oath to defend Constitution against all enemies, both foreign and domestic. I took an oath to defend and obey the orders above me. But I'll be damned if I'm going to lie to sustain the use of uranium munitions that leave a permanent health and environmental effect. That's flat wrong. But that's what's happening today. So we knew we had problems, okay? And we're getting told to totally ignore our problems. I don't like this. Well, it took us a long time to get the stuff cleaned up. Nobody knew what to do, nobody knew how to do it, and we sat there and we put the stuff together, piece by piece, on how to do everything, okay? And the stuff, you know how you get your medals for doing all kinds of stuff, you know, sometimes you get one for doing nothing, another time you get some for doing something. They gave me an Army Commendation Medal, and this is what we did. This is my own. "Collected, contained, secured, researched, and measured depleted uranium contaminated impacted vehicles. Prepared a detailed plan for disposal of DU contaminated equipment and coordinated the plan for execution. When circumstances changed completely, developed an alternate plan and coordinated it for execution in minimal time with little supervision, and advised medical authorities on the hazards of DU contamination and recommended monitoring programs. If we didn't do this work, we didn't tell them they didn't do medical, why the heck did I get a medal and the rest of our team get medals for doing this? Their daughter got medals for it, do all the work too, didn't she, ma'am?
Yes, she did.
She sure did. They did the work. Well, we came back, we're writing up all our reports, we're trying to get medical care for ourselves. They're flat, ignoring all of the exposures. When you came back to get your physical to get go back to civilian life, they basically had you walk up the stairs, turn your head, and cough. Great. I'm in there and getting checked out, and I said, I got all these exposures, I did the work. And they said, no, nothing happened, we can't put it in your records. Man, direct orders not to put all of the known exposures in the records of our soldiers, our sons and daughters. Well, we put all this stuff together, started writing our reports. And I got back to the University of Illinois, and then all of a sudden, in the late summer of 1992, I get a phone call from the Army. Surprise! The U.S. military was found in willful violation of the National Environmental Protection Act. Willfully contaminate our environment, willfully and deliberately in violation. And they said, hey, Doug, come on and fix it. Okay. And we went over to do that. And they were happy again. And then all of a sudden, the United States Senate sent a letter down to the United States Army Environmental Policy Institute and said, thou shalt study the health and environmental effects of uranium on the battlefield. But the United States Senate told the U.S. military, quote, figure out ways to reduce the toxicity of uranium munitions. Now, if an idiot U.S. senator knows this stuff is toxic, you think some general should? But of course, the higher the rank they get, the less brains they got.
Right. You Amen.
Know? Sergeants run the military. Well, we're up there, and all of a sudden, we get a directive down from the Secretary of State through General Paul Greenberg, and they said, hey, Doug, Dave, and Gary, would you write up the cleanup plan to clean up all the uranium contamination that's left in Iraq, Kuwait, and Saudi Arabia? So, Colonel David Lindsay, Major Dr. Boom Boom Gary Brinkley, and myself did. Quote, this is what it was. Depleted uranium contaminated equipment and facilities recovery plan outline. Now, it went up through the Army to the U.S. State Department over to the Emirate of Kuwait. This is what I like, man. Guess who we were ordered to write it for? Which company?
Bechtel.
Try again.
Halliburton.
Oh, you got it. Now, ain't this neat? He sends us to war, approves the use of munitions, so he can get the cleanup plan and make a lot of money. Who sent us to war again? Who authorized the use of the munitions? Who's got the cleanup plan? God, ain't it nice?
Brown and Root.
Yeah, Brown and Root. Now,
part of Halliburton.
Yeah, same thing. So we're putting all our reports together, trying to get everything taken care of, and we're not getting anything done. The General Accounting Office put out a report in January, said you've got to provide medical care, you've got to clean up the environment, you've got to do training and education. Now, March 1993 comes along. This is some 2 years after the war, and they're exposed. They've known from day one that uranium munitions leave a toxic residue when they get in the body, you're going to get sick. And all of a sudden, they start thinking about what they're going to do. How many people know who Mengele is? God, not somebody you want to have fun with, right? No compelling evidence was found in the literature review to change the current surgical criteria for the removal of uranium fragments in the body. The purpose of leaving the fragments in the body is, quote, quantification and documentation of toxicological, that's a heavy metal toxicity, and radiological cancer tissue necrosis risks of embedded uranium fragments by, one, measuring and documenting uranium levels in each soldier using in vivo and in vitro measurement techniques. Two, determining the parameters and models needed to translate uranium levels into the body into estimates of increased cancer risk from this exposure. Three, comparing the clinical course of the body's response to DU fragments with that of other non-DU fragments to determine whether clinically significant differences exist due to either the chemical or radiological properties of depleted uranium and determine the risk of chronic kidney toxicity due to long-term chronic exposure to elevated levels of uranium.
Who wrote this policy?
The United States Army, a written directive to the VA and physicians in the Army.
Was there a name? Did somebody sign it?
Yeah, a friend of mine did.
Joseph.
Colonel Eric Daxon. Watch the film, Whoa. Invisible Wars. Watch the film, Hidden Wars. And see the man in person. Now, he point blank stated, too, that if you excrete uranium levels at anything exceeding 250 micrograms total uranium per day, you're supposed to be in weekly medical care and you're going to have kidney toxicity. And I'll come back to that in a moment. So we're putting all this together, writing reports. I'm trying to get information up because I'm working for the Army again. And all of our work, we finally got direct orders out. Okay? Now, the Secretary, Deputy Secretary of Defense ordered the Secretary of the Army to take care of things. Now, you got to remember, in the Army, you got secretaries and all that stuff, and you got warriors, okay? You got generals. Well, on August 19th of 1993, an order was issued. Army order was issued. Quote, provide adequate training for personnel who may come in contact with DU-contaminated equipment. Complete medical testing of personnel exposed to DU-contaminated equipment during the Persian Gulf War. Develop a plan for DU-contaminated equipment recovery. Signed, General Eric Shinseki. Guess who just sent their daughter to war and abandoned her daughter over there? General Eric Shinseki. And before this war started, the White House and General Shinseki stated specifically the health warnings about the health and environmental effects of uranium munitions were Iraqi propaganda. Now, how can a commanding general of the U.S. Army, the four-star, have issued the order in 1993, all of a sudden, when he wants to use them again in battle, come out and say it's Iraqi propaganda? And he ain't never given medical care to everybody to begin with, and even though he ordered it directly. Well, in 1994, I got recalled to active duty as the director of the Depleted Uranium Project. Now, ladies and gentlemen, I'm a warrior. You got to understand. I had no idea why I got the order to clean it up for the beginning of the first time. I got no real idea, other than I've been kicking butt, to get back as the director of the DU project. Now, Shinseki's order was develop education and training, do the medical, and put together environmental cleanup. Well, lo and behold, I got the tasking to do the education and training and environmental cleanup. Now, I'm a science teacher. I'm a physicist. But I don't sit in some friggin' laboratory and read textbooks and try to figure out what makes the world kick. If I want to find out what happens, like we did, we went out to Nevada test site, Mercury, Nevada, Area 25. Now, the famed Area 51 is right over the hill. There ain't no spacemen there. Just weird airplanes. And we blew up stuff, and we burned stuff. When you want to find out what happens when you destroy stuff, you blow it up, and you measure the contamination. When you want to find out how far contamination goes, you burn it and you blow it up and you measure it. When you want to find out what it looks like inside a tank that's hit with uranium munitions, you get the U.S. Marine Corps from 29 Palms. And they would get out there with their Abrams tanks and their Bradley fighting vehicles, and I'd say, this is where I want a round. They'd fire that round. We're flying downrange with the round. We're onto the tank, into the tank, while the thing is still on fire, while that uranium round is still burning. We want to find out what happened. Science is not only objective information, it's subjective evaluation. You got to look what happens and figure out what does it mean. We found out that the amount of uranium contamination was so great that you absolutely have to wear full respiratory and skin protection within 50 meters of any destroyed vehicle. Now, I happen to know their daughter never ever got that stuff. And they never told anybody else. We also learned that the amount of contamination goes out to 400 meters for every destroyed vehicle, building, bunker. Now, I didn't measure any farther than 400 meters because I didn't think it would go any farther than 400 meters. But it does. Now, the National Lead Site over here in Albany, New York, Dr. Len Dietz, who was the U.S. Navy, measured the uranium contamination coming off of the National Lead Plant downtown Albany, 30 miles away at the U.S. Navy site, nuclear site, where he was the head health physicist. Now, he was measuring stuff to make sure nothing got off of the Navy site, and what he did is captured enough uranium to cause adverse health effects coming from the National Lead site 30 miles away. And we wonder why everybody's sick and problems. We found out how do you measure it. We found out standard Geiger counters won't pick this stuff up. They're alpha and beta emissions, and they're low levels. An alpha, you have to have a specific piece of equipment, and you can't be any more than a finger width away from it. So I could have a pile of uranium oxide dust here, enough to make everyone in this room choke and gag and get sick within 72 hours like us, and you'll never measure with a standard Geiger counter. You'll never find it. So we designed special equipment and designed specialized techniques. And I put the training together and I put videotapes together with my staff to teach people how to do this. And the military has ignored it. What we did is we learned that you have to clean this stuff up. Because as the military has confirmed in the Common Task Training Manual, point blank states, uranium contamination make food and water unusable for eternity. You can't clean it up. And then there, in the Common Task Training, they point blank state that you got to wear full respiratory and skin protection within 50 meters. Huh, no biggie. Why should we give the kids anything that works? Tell them what to do it. Now, today, we did a press conference in front of the recruiting station for this community. The U.S. Army, Air Force, Navy, everybody together. And after that press conference, several of us went in to talk to the guys in the Army, introduce them and invite them to come here. Surprise. I asked them when I went in there, introduced myself and said, invited them to come tonight. I said, have you guys done any training on DU? Well, I didn't get an answer other than you got to call public affairs. You know? And the same thing has happened. Ladies and gentlemen, I would ensure that those recruiters in this community tell your sons and daughters the truth. The fact that the gas masks are flat defective that they issue to the military, that's the M40 series. United States General Accounting Office confirmed that before Gulf War I, Gulf War II again. You got to make sure that they provide the physiological exam prior to deployment to find out what the health status is of the individuals going. They ain't doing that. Christopher Shays and Bernie Sanders, some of the other congressmen, they had a great big congressional hearing on that. And they caught Michael Kilpatrick absolutely violating all requirements. Then you have to make sure that your sons and daughters get proper military education and training before they go to war. Now, everybody's heard of Jessica Lynch, right? You know what happened there? You seen the report? They went to battle, they drove into battle without any compasses, they didn't have maps, they didn't know where they were going, their trucks ran out of gas, the M16s and the M60s jammed because they were not cleaned, they ran out of fuel, and they gave those guys Purple Hearts and Bronze Stars. Yeah, that commander ought to be hung. Flat out. There ain't nobody that even a sergeant would send people in with equipment that's defective and broken, and especially if they don't know how to maintain their M16 or M60. Friggin' Cook's an expert with an M16, right, sir?
Not an expert, but I can handle one.
You can handle one. You keep it clean, don't you? Because you never know when you're going to get into a problem. Well, it ain't happening. And they're not telling the troops about the risks and the hazards of uranium munitions or anything else. They're not telling the troops about the risks and hazards of all the environmental contamination from war, whether it be the pyridostigmine pyrrolamide tablets that they're having, that ate before and they're eating again. That's the gumdrops with Ray. They're not telling you about all the immunizations you get and you get sick on. They're not telling you the fact that when you're out there sucking in sand, that sand, even without the contaminants, is going to make you sick. That's L. Escan disease, by the way. confirmed from Gulf War I all the way through. It's like going out here and breathing fine dust and particles. You're going to get sick. They're not telling them this stuff. And we can't get medical care.
Is all of Iraq contaminated at this point?
Iraq is totally contaminated at this point. Iraq was contaminated from the beginning of Gulf War I and after Gulf War I and up to the present.
So they're all going to die from cancer, too?
Oh, their people over there are completely sick because they've got all the cancers, got all the birth defects. Yeah, if you haven't seen it, there's a picture back there. I understand if you guys not had the exhibit, the Children of the Gulf War here, you need to make arrangements to get that traveling exhibit here to show you what's happened to the children. I mean, the number of children, the birth defects and everything else is astonishing. The kids with the fragments of uranium in their body, they found uranium in their semen, and their kids were born with all kinds of birth defects. Here in the United States, and I absolutely confirmed it in Australia just a few weeks ago. Well, what has happened, ladies and gentlemen, and this one they don't want to tell you about. The Gulf War I casualty count in October of 1991 was 294 dead, about 50-50 between direct combat, again, mortally friendly fire, and accidents, and I had a little over 460 wounded. So the casualty count at the end of October of 1991, when the main combat force redeployed back to the United States or Germany or wherever they had to go to, was a little over 760 wounded and dead and injured. As of May of 2002, the United States Department of Veteran Affairs has confirmed that 572,833 of America's sons and daughters served in the Persian Gulf between August of 1990 and October of 1991. Out of 572,833, as of May of 2002, the United States Department of Veteran Affairs had awarded permanent disability to 159,238 of our sons and daughters. 159,000. It's up over 180,000 right now for that time frame. Now, mine didn't come until August. Okay, so last August, so I wasn't including that number, but mine's through now. Now, we had a problem. We knew the contamination remained there all the time. We continued to send our warriors in between, okay, the fall of 1991, and we're continuing to send them in there right now. Their daughter is over there right now, and there are other members of this post. They're up on an honor board up there. They're over there right now as we speak. What they don't tell you is that contamination remains there. And now the official count as of May of 2002, and again, I got to get this updated, 221,502 of our sons and daughters are now labeled as permanently disabled.
40%.
Yeah.
Can you say the number again?
221,502.
And the percentage?
It's over 30%. It keeps climbing. And it's going way up. Now, when I talked to the people at the Secretary of Defense office, they told me, hey, Doug, the actual count's over 300,000. Because you got to remember, these are the ones that Reserve National Guard had got out under VA disability, but you can get a straight disability right from the Army. Remember, you know what I'm talking about. You can either get directly from the Army or get from the VA. The Army guys ain't counted in the VA data. So we're looking at 300,000 of our sons and daughters permanently disabled from a 100-hour war because of the contaminants of war. Now, I had a total of 294 dead, 50%. Okay, combat, and 50% accidents. As of May 2002, the number that have died that have been confirmed with VA service connection was 10,324. The number is over 20,000 today because there's a lot that never got service connection and they're not included in that. 100-hour war. I'm a warrior. When I have to go to war to defend this nation, baby, I'm going to go. But I'm going to make sure that it's justifiable to defend that war, that I'm going to war for reasons, specific reasons that can be verified. And when I go to war, I'm going to make sure that every one of the soldiers and the warriors has proper education and training that they're not doing, that they have proper equipment that's functional, and they get the medical care that they deserve when they come back.
Are you ever going to try to stop depleted uranium from being used?
Boy, I've been trying like mad to stop that.
I mean, other than these lectures, but I mean, what...
What we've done is...
I mean, it's fine to write reports on how to clean it up, but...
Yeah. The problem you run into is the military, and again, to go back to the briefings in March right before they started this, Colonel Von Naughton up at the U.S. Army did a briefing with Kilpatrick, and they said, we're going to use uranium munitions, because you got to understand, the purpose is kill and destroy.
Now,
but not
as the
long.
Civilians.
Pardon me?
Not the civilians.
Sure. Of course.
Absolutely. You
everybody?
Kill everybody. Ma'am. Everybody. If you're in the wrong spot, I don't care how old you are, you're dead. If you're a man, a woman, or a child, you're a 6-year-old, a 3-year-old, a 5-year-old, or a 10-year-old, and you're in the wrong spot, you're dead. U.S. soldiers have been killing Iraqis over there right now. When they drive up to the friggin' checkpoint, the American says, stop. And the Iraqi goes, huh? They don't speak English. They sure don't speak, you know, English from Alabama. Man, I can't even understand English from Alabama, and I live there. And then they shoot them. It's all over the papers. And we wonder why the Iraqis are torqued off, and every mother, brother, sister, son, and daughter is shooting every American and Brit they can find. Well, heck, I would too. This is hardcore reality. The purpose of war is to kill and destroy. And when you go to war, you're going to use the best weapon you have to kill and destroy, irrespective of what's happening.
But what's coming out of that, those shots, is also affecting our soldiers. Right?
Oh, it has horrible effect on our soldiers. The whole, all of the stuff that's happened, when we go to war, we use hazardous materials, we release those all over. We blew up Iraq's chemical and biological.
They're not telling our guys.
They're not telling them at all. They're not telling them at all.
That's what Doug was asking the recruiter today. Do you want to tell them about the recruiter?
The recruiters don't tell them anything.
The recruiters ain't going to tell. This guy tap danced all around, and he finally said, you got to call the public affairs over in
Syracuse.
He gave us a phone number. So we went back over to the office, and I called him up. Phone doesn't work. You know, this is real good. So I called them back up and said, you know, phone number you guys gave me didn't work. And all of a sudden, after a few minutes, they came up with a good phone number.
Doug, has there been any coverage in national news in any way on this?
There's been some coverage. What happens with the news, and back in January, I was over to the University of Buffalo, and then I was down to St. Bonaventure. Okay, you can go to the Olean Times, bound January 30th, and pull it up in the newspaper in the Olean Times. They did the report on that. And John Hatchett, who ran Gannett News and USA Today for years, also spoke with us. And what we know happens, and it happens to this day, anytime a media press starts to write about this stuff, they get direct threats. Let me tell you, they're not going to tell anything. Anybody in the military starts to try and get medical care for all these exposures gets into problems. When you try to get medical care for yourself or your sons or your daughters or your soldiers, you get in.
Can I say something?
Yeah.
They look the other way. Our daughter's been documented that she's been affected by all this. And she's had quite a few medical problems. But when they took her this time, they sent her to Walter Reed, gave her a complete workup. She's fine. They took her. She's not fine.
She's got a statement from the Department of the Army saying that, yes, we know you were exposed to this stuff, but it is not injurious to health.
That's what they're doing to the children, to the sons and daughters of our nation. Now, yeah, just a second. Then I'll take some questions. The problem we run into is when you go to war, the purpose is kill and destroy, and they disregard everything that happens. Okay? We've got to turn that all around completely. Now, one by one, let me tell you, there's an awful lot of good people in the military, and they're yelling and screaming their lungs off. All I'm doing is finishing my job. I got a direct order to clean up the DU mess. I got sent up to work with their daughter, who was already doing it up there, and the rest of that 144th. Okay? And then when we got back to do all of this stuff, you can't get it done. Okay? And the reason is simple. They don't care. Today, ladies and gentlemen, we've got a problem. The leaders of our nation, the leaders of our military have forgot what their responsibility is. When we go to war, we can't leave a toxic residue that not only kills the enemy immediately, but kills the women, the children, and our warriors for eternity. I'm a warrior, but I've reached a conclusion. Number one, you can't ever use uranium munitions in combat again. But more important, other than uranium munitions, because we can no longer deal with the health and environmental effects of combat and the destruction of an infrastructure, I've reached one conclusion. War is obsolete and peace must reign on Earth, period.
You're listening to Major Doug Rocky, an expert on depleted uranium, speaking on July 23rd in Rochester, New York. This is Unwelcome Guests. You're tuned to WEOS Geneva, WXXE Fenner Syracuse, W201CD Ithaca Community Radio, or Free Radio, Santa Cruz.
I got called over to Athens, Greece for a United Nations UNESCO conference with Child and the Family on the effects of war on children. Unbelievable opportunity. Pekka Vistra from the United Nations and myself and Nick Santos from Greece was there, and Felicity Armitrout, who is probably one of the world's greatest journalists looking at, investigative journalists looking at the effect of war on children, on vets. And at the end of this conference, okay, this place is packed to the gills. You got leaders of all nations in there. We had 180 nations, some represented. We've got all the Nobel laureates arrayed down in the front center. And at the end of this thing, it'd be like the vice president of Greece, and I don't know how they define it over there, got up and closed the conference. And then with that thing, as they closed the conference, the woman who's heading UNESCO for the United Nations, she got up and closed her conference. And you have to understand, there's 180 nations. There's nations sitting next to each other that are at war. And all of a sudden, a single voice from wherever this man is started to raise a song. And that one voice raised a song amongst everybody in the audience. And nations there were at war together, but people that came together were singing one song in all of their languages, "Let there be peace on earth." If we work together and we talk together, we can resolve our differences. But the name of the game, ladies and gentlemen, this is how I want to close. Now we'll take some questions. What's happened today is flat wrong. We went to Gulf War II without any justification. We know that Iraq did not possess the chemical and biological munitions, much less ready to release those in 45 minutes. We know that the uranium thing was a scam, but we went to war, and we're going to war again. We went to war in Afghanistan in order to sustain the oil pipeline from the inter-Soviet republics on down to the port of Posni in Pakistan. That's a February 12, 1998 congressional directive. Go look it up. It's there. But there's something more important. This is where each and every one of us needs to do something. Now, I come from Illinois. I come from the land of Lincoln, okay? Where I live, Lincoln rode a horse. He did courts and trials and, you know, did all kinds of things. And Lincoln went on to become a president and hold our nation together. Now, where I come from in Illinois, you have to memorize Lincoln's Gettysburg Address. You got to remember that. You got to memorize that. Oh, you don't even get out of eighth grade. Okay? And in that immortal address, there's a lesson for all of us to do and to follow to this day. And this is the end and the solution to what's happening in this nation today. Because it's going to take each and every one of us to fulfill our responsibility to ensure those final last words are that government of the people, by the people, and for the people shall not perish from the earth. If we continue to kill the children and contaminate air, water, and soil because of arrogance and this desire to kill and destroy, the prophecy of the ages in all cultures and all religions will never occur. That prophecy was demonstrated with all the nations singing together at the United Nations UNESCO conference. Because that prophecy is, "And a child shall lead us to peace." But if we kill the children, if we don't learn from the past, how is that prophecy going to come about? I think it's time to reclaim the prophecy. I think it's time to reclaim the country. I think it's time to take care of the warriors that are sick and ill.